MacCast, Wednesday, March 2nd, 2005. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for the MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geek. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. Alright, so I'm back. Hopefully you guys will bear with me. I still have a little bit of residuals from my cold, but we'll try and get through this show. It's going to be a very large one because we have a lot to cover. Obviously, since I missed Monday, we've got just things to go over, so I'm going to jump right into it. So some people have done a little digging around inside the Mac Mini case, and we have a brand new Mac mystery. It turns out, attached to the back of what looks like the optical drive, is a extra connector that seems to not be connected to anything. And current theories running around the web are that it might have been a integrated iPod dock on top, because it actually has a FireWire controller built into it and a bunch of connectors. I have a link in the show notes if you want to take a look at it and check it out. For those of you who are familiar with Audio Hijacks Pro, it's a great piece of software from the developers over at Rogue Amoeba. Well, they've given us another great piece of new software. It's called Airfoil, and this one's going to allow us to use our Airport Expresses to stream audio from any source to our home stereo or powered speakers. So we're no longer attached to just using our Airport Express with iTunes. We can now play audio from any source, QuickTime, the web, Windows Media Player if you want, anything. So you might want to check that out. Link from the show notes. It is Rogue Amoeba makes really great pieces of software. If you haven't been to their site before, you might want to just cruise over and check out the stuff they have to offer. Looks like Apple is taking some steps to potentially beef up future support options. Right now they are, I don't know if you'd call it beta testing or just trying out a 24-hour online chat support for new iMac owners. So if you've purchased an iMac within the past 90 days, you can log on to Apple's support website and get 24-hour tech support through a chat application. So if you're a new iMac owner, you might want to check that out. The iTunes Music Store continues to go strong and is continuing to exceed all expectations. They have now just surpassed 300 million downloads. So they've had 300 million total purchases and downloads on the iTunes Music Store. So that's great for Apple, should be continue to be great for the stock pricing. So we talked a lot before Macworld about rumored devices, and one of the devices we talked a lot about was a breakout box for a GarageBand that would allow you to use standard XLR microphones, and it would be a FireWire device you could plug microphones into, would have a preamp, and it would retail for about $149, and the device was called Asteroid. The code name for it was Asteroid. Well, it looks like there's further evidence discovered by a couple websites that Asteroid product potentially did exist. Apple Insider found a hidden TIFF file inside GarageBand 2 package called Asteroid.TIFF, and then in addition, the Mac Rumors website found some additional files inside a package in the GarageBand package, and they were labeled things like Asteroid Max Volume, Asteroid Min Volume, Asteroid Slider, etc. So a lot of evidence pointing to the fact that there is some sort of Asteroid-type device or something related to Asteroid and GarageBand. But some additional sources at Apple Insider have basically told Apple Insider that the Apple postponed the Asteroid project indefinitely due to poor initial execution. So looks like there was a device, but the rumor has it now that that device won't see the light of day for a really long time, which kind of bums me out because I was really looking forward to that device. It's something that would really benefit podcasters, and with podcasting taking off so well, we could use a device like that. There aren't many FireWire boxes for taking line inputs or XLR microphone inputs and doing that very cheaply, and the Apple device was holding promise of that. So sorry to see that device might not become a reality. Don't have many details on this next item, but websites are reporting that EyeSight quantities in the retail chain are in low supply, which signals that there may be a revision of the EyeSight. Apparently, the EyeSight has gone through two revisions already. They're currently on revision B, and it's rumored that we will soon see revision C, but no details in terms of what, if any, changes are involved in that revision. Quick comment on the EyeSight. I think this is an awesome device. If you haven't had a chance to check out iChat doing a video chat with an EyeSight camera, it's truly amazing. The quality is pretty incredible compared to the USB cameras you used to try and do video conferencing with, which were pretty poor. The EyeSight does a really great job, and with the new codecs coming out in Tiger, it's supposed to get even better. So if you haven't picked up an EyeSight, you may want to look into it. So a couple podcasts ago, we talked about the fate of the eMac in light of the new Mac Mini, and a lot of people agree that the eMac will be around for quite a while longer, especially in the educational market, for a number of reasons that we discussed. But there's some information out on the web that some of the Apple retail stores have actually replaced the eMacs in their children's area. If you've ever been to an Apple retail store, they have a whole kids area, and it usually had, I think, four eMacs with kids games on them, so for kids to try out. Apparently, a lot of the stores are replacing those with 17-inch iMacs. So don't know what to read into that. One of the rumors is that they may be phasing the eMac out of the Apple retail stores. I would assume then leaving them online for educational sales. But we'll just have to wait and see. I'm sure, like we've talked about, the eMac will be around for a lot longer, though. So now a bit of sad news for the Mac Community Report. Jeff Raskin passed away at the age of 61, which was over this weekend, from pancreatic cancer. Jeff Raskin was the original interface expert who has mainly been credited for the original Macintosh. He was hired on Apple in 1978. He was the 31st employee, and he spearheaded a group of people, a team of people, that were put together on a project which later became the Macintosh project. He's also credited with giving the Macintosh its name. They say it was named after his favorite fruit. Raskin actually left Apple in 1982 after a falling out with Steve Jobs, which was 2 years before the Macintosh even ever released. So, sorry to have lost Jeff Raskin, and my heart and thoughts go out to his family. So if you've been looking for a device to watch and record television on your Macintosh, you might know that up until now, pretty much the iTV from Elgato Systems was about your only option, or your best option, I guess I should say. Well, there's a new player on the market, or a new device on the market, that looks to be showing some promise. It is from Miglia Technology. Hopefully I pronounced that right. And it is a personal video recorder. So it's a little hardware breakout box. It's a USB 2.0 device. It has MPEG 2 and 4 plus DivX hardware compression. It integrates with the Titan online TV scheduling, so you can schedule your recordings. It has iCal integration and also will record directly into iMovie if you want to do any editing there. And it is called Evolution TV. There's a link from the show notes, and it will retail for $279 US, which I believe is less than the Elgato device. So good news if you're in the market for a personal video recorder that works with your Macintosh. Finally, in the news tonight, if you are a fan of independent Apple resellers, there's a little more bad news. We've got some more Apple resellers, independent resellers, going out of business. Two in Canada to tell you about. Canadian reseller First Avenue is closing its doors after 20 years, and that follows, back in September, Ottawa-based BMAC Le Magasin Inc., hopefully I pronounced that right, my French is probably not very good, which had to close three of its four stores in the Montreal area back in September. As I told you about, though, the Apple stores are going to be opening up in Canada. The first store is opening in Toronto on May 21st. So, another case where I'm sure they're going to argue Apple is pushing out the independent resellers to make way for their own stores. I'm not so sure how much that is the case or not, but you know, it's always sad to lose anybody who's promoting and selling Macintosh products. And then the third store that I mentioned it's closing is one in Florida. It's called Mac Center, and they stopped selling and supporting Apple products on February 28th, 2005, so just a couple days ago. So really sad to see that happen. The Apple stores, however, as I mentioned before, are a really great place to shop for Apple products. It's a wonderful experience and something we have been missing in the retail sector for a long time. The independent stores have done a really great job, but maybe their time has just passed. I don't know. I have a local Mac independent reseller that I go to that I really love, and I frequent both them and the Apple store. So I encourage you to support your local independent resellers if you have them in your area. You know, we'll just have to wait and see. Hopefully this trend stops pretty soon. So now on to some audio comment and feedback. I want to let you guys know that I've been getting more and more audio feedback, and it's really, really appreciated. I want you to continue to send it in, but it's getting to the point now where I'm having to be a little more selective about the audio comments. I try and get as many on the show as I possibly can, but obviously I can't get everyone's comments on. So if you send me an audio comment, I try to at least respond via email, but you may or may not get played on the show. So I just want to throw that out there up front so everybody knows. So the first thing we have is last show, I believe. It's been so long since I've done this. Last show, there was a question from Bill, and he was having some issues with his PowerBook DVD burner, and Troy had a potential answer for him.
Hello, my name is Troy. I'd first off like to say hello to all the MacCast listeners out there. I'd second like to say thank you to the Mac Geek himself for keeping a great podcast going. My message today is in response to Bill, who was having a problem with his combo drive on his TI Book 667. He was having a problem anytime he tried to use his drive, burn a CD, after watching a DVD minus R, or a DVD generally, I think. I also have a TI Book 667. And had some problems in the past with my combo drive as well. Mine turned out to be mechanical. However, there was something that I had tried in the process of troubleshooting. Now, Bill, I don't know what troubleshooting you've done, and hopefully this isn't redundant information, but in my troubles, I came across a slot combo drive update. And that was from Apple directly, either through a software update or the support site. You might try that as a first step. Other than that, I've gone through two replacements on my drive. Failing the software side, you might have to look at hardware. So good luck with that, Bill, and looking forward to hearing more podcasts. See you guys.
So there you go, Bill. It looks like there is a potentially a firmware update or a software update for your drive, and if that doesn't help, it may look like the PowerBook's taking a trip into an Apple service center. Next, I got a little bit of a disturbing report from a listener, Daniel, about the Mac Minis and their video. Apparently, there's a lot of people reporting that when they hook their Mac Mini up to a VGA monitor, either a flat screen or a CRT, that they are getting a really dim video signal, the extreme loss in brightness. And they take the same monitor and hook it to a PC or to a desktop Macintosh or another Macintosh model, including like an iBook, and the video is just fine. The Mac Mini, when it's hooked to a DVI monitor, a flat panel DVI monitor, is fine. So I'm not sure if this affects every Mac Mini model. Anybody who's out there that has a Mac Mini and does have it hooked to a VGA type monitor using the Apple DVI to VGA adapter, give me a report. Let me know what your experience has been. I'm not like sure, like I said, from the reports I've read online, if this is every Mac Mini or just a certain batch of them. Hopefully it's limited to just one batch or one manufacturing plant, and it'll be resolved quickly by Apple. Unfortunately, I kind of hate to say it, but sometimes this is one of the risks that you take in becoming an early adopter of a product, especially a brand new design product like the Mac Mini. There's occasionally manufacturing problems, and you end up with defects that plague the sort of version 1 models and get fixed in later models. So sometimes there's a little benefit into waiting to the next revision of a product before picking it up. But Apple's usually good about repairing these situations and servicing models. So hopefully there's a fix for it. Other than sending it in and replacing the entire logic board, though, I'm not really sure what Apple's going to be able to do for the models that are affected. All right, last time we also had a listener who was having some trouble with sending email attachments, Word documents, and I believe PowerPoint files to PC users from his Entourage, Microsoft Entourage, to a PC user using Outlook or another PC mail client. He was sending the attachments, but they were arriving as .dat files for some reason. And I threw the question out to everybody. I got some great responses, but the one that seems to make the most sense to me comes from this listener.
Hi, this is Mike calling from the UK. In terms of the listener question about mail attachments on Entourage, I suspect that he's encoding it for Unix computers only. If you go to preferences under mail and news preferences, look in compose, you get the option to have to encode attachments if you do it for any computer. And hopefully that should solve it.
So what Mike is actually talking about is that by default, Entourage encodes email attachments in an Apple-friendly format. I believe it's actually Apple DoubleByte. He says Unix in his voicemail, but I believe it's called Apple DoubleByte. And you can actually change that setting in the Entourage preferences, and it sounds like you want to change it to any, which I believe actually sets it in the standard MIME format, which is the standard format for sending attachments. So that will solve the issue of the file showing up in the wrong format on the receiving end. Okay, next I got a comment from Gary, and Gary needs some help in looking for some mapping software, and I was unable to get an answer for him, so I'm hoping someone out there might know a piece of software that he's looking for.
Hi, Adam. My name's Gary. I'm listening to you from Calgary, Canada. Just want to say you're doing a great job on the podcast and really, really like listening. Just had a question. I've been using a Microsoft product on my PC called Streets and Trips. It's a navigation program for maps and whatnot. And I just wondered if you or any listeners know of a Mac equivalent mapping program similar to Microsoft Streets and Trips that I could use on the Mac. Because right now I'm using it through Virtual PC, and it's kind of a pain. It'd be nice to have a Mac program that did that. Anyway, if anyone knows, maybe you could mention it. And thanks again, and keep up the good work.
So I'm not familiar with that Microsoft product, Streets and Trips. I'm not really sure what it can do. I'm assuming it has some sort of GPS support. But if anybody knows of a Macintosh equivalent program, if they could email me, mattcast@gmail.com, or send an audio comment, I'd appreciate it. And I'm sure Gary would appreciate it also. So next question came from listener Matt, and I'm pretty sure that there is nothing out there for this, but for those of you who have purchased an iPod Shuffle, or maybe those of you who don't have an iPod Shuffle and don't know this, when you purchase an iPod Shuffle and you plug it into your Mac for the first time, or your PC, it attaches itself or registers itself to iTunes running on that computer. And if you take that device and plug it into another computer running iTunes, be it a Mac or a PC, it will actually pop up a message and say, this iPod Shuffle is registered to another machine. Do you want to erase the music on it and register it to this new machine? So there's no way to take an iPod Shuffle between two machines. And what Matt was wondering is if anybody out there is aware of a hack or something that will allow you to use an iPod Shuffle between two machines, sort of the way you can with an iPod when you set it into manual mode for managing your music. I'm not aware of any hack like this, but if anybody does know, send an email, mattcast@gmail.com. So next I got a comment from Jeffrey. We had talked a little bit on shows a while back about Firefox, the Firefox browser, and how great it is. It's from mozilla.org if you want to check it out. But he was wondering, he had also noticed there was another browser on Mozilla called Camino, and he was wondering what the difference between Camino and Firefox is. And basically, as far as I know, the difference between the two browsers is Firefox has essentially replaced Camino. I don't believe Camino is in active development anymore. I think Firefox is the browser that's now based on Mozilla technology moving forward that is available and being actively developed. Camino is still available for download, and you're welcome to use it, but there is no, there's going to be no updates for it as far as I know. What's similar about the two is they're both based on the Mozilla source code, which is the open source portion of Netscape Navigator. A few years back, Netscape open sourced their browser engine in the form of Mozilla and made that available to any developer to develop a browser on top of. And Camino was one of those browsers that was developed early on the Mozilla source code. There's also one just called Mozilla that's available for download. But the sort of winner in the field of Mozilla browsers is Firefox for the time being, and I highly recommend you, if you haven't checked it out, downloading and trying it. I've switched to it exclusively on my Macintosh and also on the PC. It is an absolutely fabulous browser, and I know we talked about the little exploit that was available for, or that affects Mozilla and Safari. That has now been plugged in the version 1.0.1 version of Firefox. So if you haven't downloaded the newest version of Firefox, I recommend you do that because it includes several security updates. So as I just mentioned, that security update for Firefox fixes the international domain name spoof that we talked about a couple shows ago, where someone could register a domain using international characters that would look like a conventional domain that didn't contain international characters, and essentially try and scam you to giving them your credit card or personal information. And that has been patched in Firefox version 1.0.1. But the exploit still affects Safari, and a listener, Manuel, sent me some information about a new plugin that you can get for Safari that will actually warn you when that spoof might be being attempted to be used on you in Safari. And it's called SAFT, S-A-F-T, and there's a link from the show notes, and it will display an alert, basically, if you click a link and it thinks it might be potentially being spoofed through this exploit. It will display an alert and warn you that you might be being spoofed. It does have an incompatibility with another program I'm going to talk about here just in a second called Pith Helmet, so that's the only other thing I think you need to be aware of. But there's a link from the show notes, and if you want to protect yourself on Safari, you might want to grab that. At least until Apple comes out with their own fix for Safari. So next we mentioned, I think on the last show, this new problem with advertisers are getting smart to pop-up blockers, and they're now using a new technique called pop-unders that avoids the built-in pop-up detection or pop-up blockers built into Safari and Firefox. Well, according to listener Sam, at least for Safari owners, there is a temporary fix for these annoying new pop-unders.
Hey man, it's Sam from Tampa. I'm really glad that in your last show you mentioned the pop-under ads, because I've been going nuts for the last couple of weeks trying to figure out why I had these ads under my main browser window, even though I had my pop-up blocker protection turned on in Safari. And I did a little searching online and found this great little Safari plugin that does a fantastic job. Since I installed it, I have not had any pop-under ads, and I was getting 2, 3, sometimes 4 or 5 a day up until I installed this plugin. It's called Pith Helmet, and you can find it at CULater, that's CULater.net/software.php, and it's a free download. The author asks for a $10 donation if you like the program and plan to use it, and in my opinion, it is worth every penny of that $10. So hopefully people will check it out and find it useful. I sure did. Thanks.
So that's Pith Helmet. I think Pith Helmet has actually been around for a while. I think it was actually developed before Safari had its own built-in pop-up blocker, but it looks like it may be gaining some new life with these new pop-unders, and it actually goes a step further than Safari's current built-in tools. So check that out if you want to stop the pop-unders for a little while, at least until Apple comes up with their own fix. So next we have a software review from Aswad, and I just want to comment, if anybody out there, I've been getting a lot of feedback, people asking me why I don't do more reviews, and it basically comes down to the fact that it takes me quite a while just to assemble the news, assemble the comments, and record the show. So at the end of the day, I really don't have a whole bunch of time to review software. It takes a long time to sit down with a software product and really give it a good review. Same thing with a piece of hardware. Hardware is even more difficult because you actually have to get access to the piece of hardware. So I encourage anybody out there who has a product that they've purchased that they either like or dislike, and I want to give a straight up honest review of a piece of software or a piece of hardware, to sit down, record an MP3 file, and send it in to me. I will happily edit it into the show, and I think it actually sounds better coming from someone who's actually able to sit down or has gone through the process of actually using the product and gaining a real life experience versus just a reviewer who sits down with a product maybe for a couple hours on a Saturday and then makes a quick opinion of something. So send me your audio comments, and with that, here's Aswad with a review of Pod2Go.
Hello, my name is Aswad, and I live in Portland, Oregon, and I'm recording this today because I don't think I've ever heard you mention Pod2Go for the iPod. Ever since I got my iPod Mini, I stumbled across a program called Pod2Go. It's a third-party software by Kenjango, and it has a news, reader, RSS feeds, weather, movies, stocks, horoscopes, lyrics, text, directions, applications, backup, and they just added podcast. So, really, people need to get this program for their iPod. I got rid of my Palm Pilot after I got Pod2Go. There was no reason to have two things on my hip when now my iPod is also my Palm Pilot. The only drawback is you can't enter things on the fly like you can with a Palm Pilot. But you get home, you type your notes in, download directions, get movie stuff, your horoscopes there, every news you could possibly want. And it can be customized to have, you know, special feeds that you have specific in there. I started listening to the Madcast on it. So got to get it. You got to get Pod2Go by Kenjango. Thanks.
So there you go. Sounds like a great little application to get all kinds of information on your iPod and take it with you. Kind of reminds me of, I used to have a handspring visor a long time ago. If you guys remember those, it was a PDA device, and there was a great service, I think it's still around, called AvantGo, that provided similar type subscription services where you could get different types of content, movie reviews, things like that. So Pod2Go sounds very similar. It works with your iPods, and sounds really great. Unfortunately for me, I only have a second generation iPod, so it doesn't support the notes feature. So I don't believe the software will work for me. But if you have a third or fourth generation iPod, definitely sounds like something worth checking out. So next, I got a little piece of advice from someone on getting some Apple products on the cheap. Actually, I have a piece of advice and a piece question from a listener. First thing is from Mark. Mark mentioned that now that the new iPods are out, if you look around, you can now find the older versions on clearance, and you may get a little better bargain than even buying the new models. Mark mentioned that he checked out the closeouts over at MacMall.com, and he was able to get a 4GB iPod Mini for $179 and a 40GB iPod Photo for $379, which is only $50 more than the current 30GB model. And as we mentioned on the last show, with the older version, you get the dock, you get the FireWire cable, you get the case. So you get a bunch of extras that are way more in value than the $50. So it's worth shopping around the different websites and see who has closeouts on different models. This includes hardware as well, you know, so if you're looking for an iMac or an iBook or something like that. And that kind of leads into this next question, which came from Cody, who is 14 and doesn't have a lot of cash, but he would really like to get an iBook, and he wants one with a warranty because he recognizes that he's 14 and he may do some damage to it at some point. So I wasn't really sure what to tell him. It's kind of hard to find Apple products with warranties at a really large discount. The one thing I've looked for in the past is look for Apple certified products, which are the refurbished products. Apple maintains a section on their website, and I have a link from the show notes, and it's for Apple certified products. The other place I normally check, I used to live in Oregon, so there was a great store called PowerMax, and they have a pre-owned area. Now, the pre-owned items have a little larger discounts, but they only carry a 90-day warranty from PowerMax. So that's another thing to check out. So look at pre-owned and Apple certified products. And that's one way I know to save money. Another one is to use an educational discount if you're a student, although that generally tends to be only about $50 on most Apple hardware. Barring that, I don't know. It's kind of hard. Apple makes great products, and they really retain their value on the secondary market, and even older models aren't really that cheap. In the case of the Power Max pre-owned, you only save about $200 on any individual model, and it's kind of the same for the Apple certified products. They're a little cheaper, but not much. Like I said, the one nice thing about the Apple certified products is that you can get AppleCare extended warranties on those. So something to check out if you're looking for Apple discounts. Whew. All right. Finally, I think we're at the last comment and feedback of the night. This was another question from a listener that I was unable to answer. I didn't really have an answer for, and it came from Daryl. He has a PowerBook 1.5 gigahertz, and he's using a Bluetooth mouse, and he's having an issue when waking up his PowerBook from sleep, the mouse isn't being recognized. And according to him, he's having to open Bluetooth File Exchange and try and browse for the mouse. And he says that he knows that obviously doesn't work, but apparently what it does is it gets the Bluetooth to probe out for devices, and it picks up the mouse, and the mouse starts working after that. And he's just finding that a little bit annoying to have to go through that process every time he wakes his PowerBook up from sleep. So if there's anybody out there that knows the answer to this dilemma, if maybe there's a firmware patch or some sort of fix for the mouse. One thing I can think of right off the bat, he didn't mention if this was an Apple mouse or not. If it's a non-Apple mouse, I would check the manufacturer's website for updated drivers. That would be one thing, or make sure that you have the drivers installed for your specific mouse. Even though it probably is picked up and supported by the Apple default drivers, you're better off with most third-party devices having their drivers installed, even though you don't necessarily need them. But it does solve little quirky problems like this. Barring that, I'm not really sure what to tell him, so if anybody else there out there does have an answer to that, let me know.
Welcome to the Bitterspill High Stand class.
My daddy would now make an announcement.
This is 2005, the year of the podcast. I can't be the first person to say it, but you know it's true. This podcasting thing is going to be gigantica.
Okay, thanks, Dan, for stating the obvious. I mean, MacCast listeners, you all knew that podcasting was going to be gigantica in 2005, didn't you? All right, you guys. No, the reason I'm actually playing that little transition there is that I need your help. There's a podcast I listen to that's a really great podcast. If you haven't heard it, check out thebitterestpill.com. Dan Klass is a podcaster up in the Los Angeles area in California. And he does a podcast about parenthood and just living in Hollywood and celebrity sightings. It's a lot of fun. But it's a podcast that I listen to and I enjoy listening to. But today's podcast was a little disappointing because Dan just rambled on about PodcastAlley.com and the rating system and how his show was not high up in the ratings list, and he wants to be high up in the ratings list, and I want to avoid having another show like that because it wasn't really fun for me to listen to. So I'm going to employ my listeners to help me out by actually voting for another podcast. If you could all go to podcastalley.com and vote for The Bitterest Pill, I would really appreciate it. If you can push him up into the top 10, heck, push him above the MacCast, push him to number 2 like he wants. That way he can move on and get back to doing the shows that I want to hear. So, Dan, you know I'm joking with you, but seriously, man, I'm going to help you out. We'll get you up there, and you can go back to talking about the celebrity sightings and your kids' poopy diapers and all that other fun stuff. So if you guys haven't checked it out, check out bitterestpill.com. It's really funny. Dan's a great guy, and you know, help him out. Vote at podcastalley.com for Bitterest Pill. Thanks. All right, that's the MacCast. Check out the website, maccast.com. Show notes have all the links to everything we've talked about. Send me email, mp3 audio comments, maccast@gmail.com. As always, you can leave a voice comment. 206-222-2788 is the MacCast hotline, 20-MACCAST-8. All right, I'm going to leave you tonight with some new music from GarageBand again. This band is called Flying Public. The track is called You're a Friend. And you can visit them at garageband.com or at their website, theflyingpublic.com. All right, have a good evening. Thanks, everybody, for being patient with me through the illness, and I will see you all next time.